So this afternoon, I'd like to look in a bit more detail at what drives some of this automatic, habitual reactivity we have to so much of our experience. We're very sensitive beings. We know the world, the other, ourselves, through our senses. And from the perspective of Buddhism, we talk about six senses. So we talk about sight, sound, smell, taste and touch, the normal five. But we also talk about the mind as a sense, and the objects of the mind being thoughts, memories and so on. But we're also highly sensitive to what comes in through these six senses. When somebody looks at us in a slightly unkind or critical way, it can really land deeply. You can really feel it deeply. When we're outside and the cloud parts and the sun suddenly just gently warms the face, you can feel the whole body just suddenly relax. And what we talk about is that every sense experience we have, every sense stimulation, has what's known as a feeling tone or a tonality. In the language of the Buddha, he called it Vedana, V-E-D-A-N-A. And this feeling tone is immediate. It accompanies the sense stimulation. And this feeling tone is on a spectrum from unpleasant to pleasant. So when somebody looks at us in this critical way, we receive it as unpleasant, we feel it as unpleasant. And there's a way then that we react to that. When the sun warms the face and we can just feel ourselves relaxing, it's a pleasant experience. And there's this, what we might call a grey area in the middle. It's often referred to as the neutral or neither pleasant nor unpleasant. I like to think of it more as nothing much happening. So this feeling tone and this tonality, it's important to notice that it doesn't reside in the object that's being sensed. It's actually a conditioning that we bring to it. So a very simple example is Marmite and the age-old argument that they use in their adverts: you either love it or you hate it. If Marmite was inherently unpleasant, and you can see what my perspective on this love-hate is, if it was inherently unpleasant, it would be unpleasant for everyone. So actually that unpleasantness is something that I, in my conditioning, bring to that taste of Marmite. For somebody else, it's a pleasant experience. That's their conditioning. So this experience of pleasant, unpleasant is part of our conditioning. And it's actually not saying anything in particular about the object. It's not saying that the object is bad or good. What it's actually doing is it's giving us some information. It's telling us something about our experience. So we have this sense that any sense experience we have will come with this tonality. And in any moment, we have six potential senses that can be stimulated. It can be a thought, a sight, a sound, smell, body sensation. What determines which one actually comes into consciousness tends to be the one that has the loudest feeling tone, the one that calls to us the most. So for most of us, we'll have habitual ones that we notice most commonly. The body is very much for most of us. If there's an unpleasant sensation in the body, we notice that quite quickly. But we also might notice something like smell for most of us doesn't get activated that much unless we're consciously smelling something. But you might notice if you're walking and there's something rotting quite close by, or sewage or something, the strength of that immediately calls the attention. So whatever's actually calling to us loudest is what tends to actually become in or appear to us in consciousness. But another aspect of this is that we tend to have a negativity bias. So the psychologists talk about how something has to be 5 times as strongly pleasant as unpleasant for it to register in our consciousness. So we will notice what's unpleasant first and what's calling loudest. And this is a very habitual way of actually attending to our experience, deeply conditioned, deeply automatic. We go through life and our attention is drawn in this way without our being aware of it. So a lot of what we're doing with meditation is starting to notice. And we've been implying this a little as we've gone along, how the attention moves. And part of this movement is to do with its feeling tone, its tonality, and how automatic that is. So as I said, the feeling tone is neither good nor bad in itself. It's giving us information. It's actually, we could say, it comes from our evolutionary survival instinct. In the days when we were hunter-gatherers, noticing that there was a rustle in the bushes beside us would actually point out to us that actually there's potential danger. We need to be aware of this. Noticing discomfort with the body. So when we touch something that's hot, there's an automatic movement away from it because it's potentially a cause of pain and damage to the body. When we cut ourselves or something like that, that feeling of pain is telling us there's something we need to respond to. And I remember coming across this report on the news one time about this rare genetic disorder where people can't actually perceive pain. So when they cut themselves or when they touch something hot, it doesn't register. And actually what they said was, this is actually quite dangerous. And what they find is these people don't live to a very old age because things happen to them, they don't notice it, they don't respond to it. And they can cause serious injury without being aware of it. So really seeing this feeling tone as a natural part of our experience that's giving us information about what's happening. The problem is it becomes deeply habitual, so that we're automatically responding in habitual ways to these feeling tones as they arise, even when there isn't actually anything particularly that needs to be responded to. So we have these underlying tendencies towards each of the feeling tones. If something is unpleasant, there's this movement of not liking, this movement of wanting to push it away, to get rid of it, to avoid it, to reject it. When something is pleasant, the opposite happens. There's this movement of, oh, I like this. I want to hold on to this. I want to repeat this. I want to grab hold of it, grasp at it. And when something is, in a sense, not stimulating anything much whatsoever, so there's neither pleasant nor unpleasant or nothing much happening, Our tendency is to not be interested, to ignore it, to actually search for something more interesting in our experience. So we have this really deeply habitual movement in our experience. Sense contact, sense stimulation. It registers somewhere on this spectrum of unpleasant, nothing much happening, pleasant, like, dislike, not interested, reject, grasp at, look for some other experience. And this drives so much of our experience. But it also starts to not just drive our experience in the moment, but also actually how we navigate and what we incline towards in the future. So I remember on my very first retreat, very first long retreat, so it's about 10 days, I think. And for first 4 or 5 days, I was really struggling with my experience. A lot of unpleasantness, didn't want it, trying to get rid of it, trying to push it away. Everything was a problem. And at some point, something in the being just let go, just stopped fighting what was going on. And I just dropped into this space of actually ease and peace and pleasantness. And I can remember going for this walk, and actually the world just suddenly was alive and really bright and vivid for me. And I can remember this one particular experience. I came across this tree in a clearing, and a bit like Laura referenced earlier, it was like I'd never seen a tree before. This tree just stood out with such beauty and uniqueness and aliveness to me. And as is the way with things, this nice, peaceful, open experience also passed. I found myself back again in that experience of struggling and not wanting, and actually wanting a different experience. And this one afternoon, a thought came to my mind, I'm going to go and find that tree again and repeat that experience. So I went for a walk, found the tree, nothing. That pleasantness, that aliveness, just wasn't there. It just felt quite dull, disappointing. Why wasn't it like I experienced it before? So what I was trying to do, rather than actually be with my experience as it actually was I was trying to repeat something from before. I was trying to have a similar experience. And we do so much of this in our lives. We're avoiding those areas of our life which are uncomfortable. For me, public speaking has always been uncomfortable, which may raise the question, what am I doing up here in the front speaking? I still find it, you know, that when I'm about to speak or in the build-up, I can still feel that anxiety, that sense of unpleasantness, of discomfort. But what I've actually learned to do is allow that experience to be there. The unpleasantness is just an unpleasant experience. I no longer need to let it control and dictate what I do or don't do. There's a sense in which we start to find the freedom to actually have some agency rather than being driven automatically. Through the clear seeing, this is how it is in the moment. This is how it feels. It's unpleasant. I don't like this. I don't want this. But not reacting from that and just allowing that to be there, to meet it with kindness, as we've been talking about, to allow it just to move through the system. We can find ourselves able to respond and actually act in life in a way that's actually more in tune with our values and our goals. My wish to share something that I found so healing and so beautiful and so valuable in my own life is more important to me than actually being driven by that automatic, I don't like being up at the front doing public speaking. And this is also true with the pleasant, as I was already explaining with that experience. So much of our life is geared around chasing after what feels pleasant. The example of the question this morning of when I'm sitting there and, you know, there's not much going on and a nice juicy fantasy about the holiday I'm going to go on comes up and it's really pleasant. There's that sense of actually chasing some stimulation, something that brings a sense of pleasantness, rather than actually being with the fact that actually there's not much going on in this moment. Maybe I'm finding a bit bored. And when we start to tune in, we might actually find that that boredom in itself is slightly unpleasant. It's driving that movement towards finding some stimulation that's pleasant and avoiding the unpleasant. And for those of you that may be a bit more familiar with this territory of feeling tone, there's a lovely teaching that was given by actually one of the Buddha's disciples, a nun. And she talked about how this neither pleasant nor unpleasant, there's not much happening. When we meet it with wisdom and with clear seeing, it can actually become pleasant. What we notice is that actually there's a certain peace and a certain ease that we can develop a taste with for that is actually quite pleasant. But if we meet this area of our experience with the word that's used is often ignorance, but if we don't meet it with a sense of clear seeing and that sense of wisdom, it will actually turn unpleasant. There'll actually be a sense of the moment not being enough. The moment's not good enough. My experience is not good enough. It should be something more. And we'll actually find ourselves either feeling bored or moving into the search for a more stimulating, more pleasant experience, which creates a stress within the system. So this investigation, this exploration, this contemplation of feeling tone is a very rich and rewarding area. We start to notice how when there's an unpleasant feeling tone, maybe like discomfort in the body, and the unpleasant feeling tone fades, we can find there's a sense of pleasantness that arises. That sense of relief and release from the unpleasant can bring a felt sense of pleasantness. And the opposite also. When there's a pleasant experience that's happening and it fades and comes to an end, we can have that sense of unpleasantness that comes with the ending or the loss of what's been pleasant in our experience. So this feeling tone is continuously changing. And a really lovely place to explore this can be in food, in eating. When we take that first bite, particularly if something's quite pleasant, and I referenced this a bit earlier, we can feel that explosion of taste, pleasantness, I like this, I want more of this. And we can start to notice how the mind can move from that. So the movement into, I want more of this. The movement to take another bite even before we finish chewing the bite we've actually have in our mouth. But also that movement of the mind that starts to build the experience even more. I wonder if there's enough to have that second slice. We might find ourselves looking over to see if there's any left. How many people are still to come in the queue? And we can find this intensification of a sense of greed, of wanting, that builds. But it can also be noticed if you really stay with the actual chewing and the staying with the taste of the food. You take that bite, there's the explosion of the taste. You chew it for a while and the taste will start to fade. And then there's just this texture of what can be quite tasteless food in the mouth. And the feeling tone changes. And it may even become slightly unpleasant. And that movement and that moment to want another bite to repeat the experience of the pleasantness. So, this movement of feeling tone, like, dislike, ignore, sets up this push-pull we have with life. We go through life pushing away, trying to avoid what's difficult, what's challenging, what's unpleasant, and chasing after, trying to repeat, trying to grab hold of what's pleasant in our lives. And just completely ignoring actually quite a large chunk of our lives, which is nothing much happening when we're washing the dishes, when we're making the cup of tea, when we're brushing our teeth. All these moments of the day where there's not much stimulation going on, where our mind just tends to not be interested in the moment, in the experience, and just drifts off into something more stimulating. And we can get caught in cycles that the Buddha referred to, and I mentioned it earlier, papancha, which I think has this lovely ring to it, how the mind just starts to spin with what's going on in our experience. So you may have experienced something similar to this, sitting in meditation, and maybe there's a little twinge in the knee, slight discomfort. And you know, just notice that not liking, not wanting it to be there. And that sense of rejecting and not wanting tends to intensify the experience a bit more. We become a bit more conscious of the discomfort in the knee. Our attention is really drawn to it. And suddenly the thought comes into the mind, if I stay with this and don't move, am I going to damage my knee? Maybe I need to move. And if we're not careful, we can suddenly find ourselves spinning this story that actually I'm going to damage myself and I'm going to need a walking stick and I'm not going to be able to walk and I have to go to the doctors and it's going. And we're just spinning in this story and no longer actually just being there with, there's discomfort in the knee. Do I need to move? Yeah, okay. I just need to move. Rather, we're spinning a story of future unhappiness and future difficulty. So, The invitation is to start to explore this movement of the mind a bit more. And we tend to not necessarily so much notice that immediate pleasant, unpleasant that arises with the experience. We tend to catch it a bit more with the liking, not liking, and that certain movement. So that liking, not liking leads to what the Buddha referred to as tanha, T-A-N-H-A, which is usually translated as craving, but more literally means thirst. And I like that because it really brings an image to me. When we have a really unpleasant or really pleasant experience, there's that real thirst or hunger, we might think of it, to get rid of it or to hold on to it. And it brings to mind the image of a person in the desert without any water, and how that thirst gives rise to a mirage, this illusion of water being there. And in a similar way, our reactivity is the illusion we have that somehow if I get rid of this, or if I can grab hold of that, my life in some way will be better. That the answer to our problems is this constant push-pull with life, that somehow that's going to make life how we want it to be. And what we actually start to discover is actually being able to meet this aspect of our experience with kindness, to start to understand it, how it drives so much of our automatic habitual reactivity, and to be able to respond to the stimulus in a way that actually is a movement of kindness, is actually the way that we start to meet our lives in a way that no longer is involved with trying to make the perfect life or the happy life, but actually lives the life that unfolds for us in a more organic and natural way. However much we try, we can't avoid discomfort and unpleasantness in our life. Our bodies age, our bodies get sick. The things we cherish pass. Things we actually don't want to happen in our lives will happen. It's just the nature of a lived experience. And opening to that and meeting that and understanding that enables us to respond in ways that actually come from kindness and care for ourselves and for others, rather than rejection or grasping. So what I'd like to do now is invite you into another contemplative exercise where we can explore some of this territory, some of this movement. So again, the invitation is to go outside and just to find a space and to find an object. So a flower, a leaf, but a fairly smallish object, so not anything as large as a tree, something a bit smaller. And again, when you've found your object, just to stand or sit with it, and just again to start as always with that sense of grounding, of coming back to yourself, opening to the whole body. And when you're ready, just open the eyes and just receive the object. So just a very gentle, relaxed gaze. You're not trying to see anything particular. You're just noticing seeing of the object. And as you sit there, the mind will move. And start to notice what's the impulse of the moving mind. Is there something I don't like in my experience? Notice that movement of rejection, of not wanting. Or maybe something pleasant has arisen, a nice bird sound, and you just notice the mind move into that because it's pleasant. It's more pleasant than just sitting here with a flower. Notice that that kind of tendency to want to stay and hold on to that pleasantness. Again, there's no right or wrong in any of this. It's just beginning to understand and learn. This is how life is. This is how we respond or react to life. We might notice that there's a sense of the moment not being enough and the mind looking for stimulation, drifting off into daydream, to fantasy, wanting something more exciting. And as you notice this movement of the mind, just acknowledging it, allowing that sense of not liking, unpleasantness, not wanting, or liking, pleasantness, wanting to hold on to, or just noticing that not being interested in the flower, and that movement of the mind from that. And then as you notice that and can see that movement, just allowing it, and then just gently coming back to the flower as your anchor. If you find yourself coming a bit overcomplicating what you're trying to do, again, just come back to closing the eyes, to grounding, bringing the attention to the whole body, and then when you're ready, just opening again to the flower or the leaf or whatever the object is. And again, just noticing, what's that movement of the mind? What's the driving force? Just starting to notice that push-pull. And also starting to notice, if you can, the tension that comes in the body with that. The contraction in the mind. There's a felt sense to that craving, that tanha, that thirst. It brings a certain tension in the searching for the present, the pleasant, the wanting to hold on to it. There's a tightening in the body, in the mind, in that wanting to push away and avoid the unpleasant. Again, there's a tension and a contracting in the body or the mind. So it also starts to become familiar with that in the body. That can often be our way in and our clue to this as we become more familiar with this movement and this, how it impacts the body. We can often start to notice it through how we are in our bodies. That felt sense of tension, of contraction, can often be a sign that there's some push-pull in our experience, some wanting something pleasant or trying to hold on to pleasant, or some not wanting something unpleasant, trying to get rid of it. So the invitation is not to make this a project. Again, just a very gentle, relaxed effort. Just noticing when you do notice that the mind has gone. What is the movement behind it? Without a judgment, without any great should or shouldn't be like this, and as much as possible without getting lost in that, and just gently coming back. And if it does feel like it's getting too complicated, just come back to simplicity. Just come back to the momentary experience as it is, as you watch the as you look at the flower, receive the flower, aware, seeing is happening. And let go of trying to notice the feeling tone if it's overcomplicating the meditation. Does that feel clear enough? Okay. So I'll ring the bell in about 15 minutes. And yeah, just a relaxed effort, an interest in this movement of the mind, without trying to make it a project, and without trying to do it right or to have some particular outcome. However it is fine just as it is. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.